Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And it's the day after Valentine's Day.
I think they call this Galentine, or maybe that's the 13th. I forget.
I heard somebody say that. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, and Valentine's Day, I will, in a very selfish note, point out, is the day I first moved to Cambridge, really.
Oh, wow.
Cambridge, Boston area. I left 44 years ago.
Holy moly.
I blew off New York City to head north.
Yeah, 44 years ago. So that was, what year was that then?
1978. As soon as the roads were clear after the blizzard of 78.
Okay, I'm 3 years before you. 75,
right.
I moved to my first apartment.
So you're like sort of the John the Baptist to my Jesus. You see, you went forward, right,
to make. You have all these Christian or Catholic references. I don't know. I have. What about Moses or somebody? I don't know. I'm a Jew.
Yeah.
I've got to think of these other ones.
Right? Anyway, my wayward youth. I don't want to dwell on it too much here, but I wanted to again speak to the plague, but without sticking around too long on it here.
I love the chart that shows that dip and where we're at now. I thought
I have to do a little poking around here.
Okay.
Pardon my here we go. So
right.
Yeah, so anyway, hopefully that's all nice and visible.
Me looks not as breathtaking as the next one, but yeah,
right. But the point is, remember the phrase level the curve?
Yes.
Right. Now admittedly,
that's
the
leveling.
Part of the reason why it's starting to look so level is because the scale, you're going from about 11,000 up to 20,000. That's a 10,000 person scale.
Yeah.
So of course it's going to look more level than it otherwise is. I mean, we jumped by another 54 today. We're consistently in double digits rather than triple digits. Just want to remind people that we actually had, daily increases over 300 and 400 per day.
When was it in Cambridge?
Yeah.
Was that? In January?
And when you consider all the backfill data, there was actually one day when we had a total of 620 new cases recorded that day. Yeah.
Cool.
But 2 days ago, I think it was 2 days ago, we got one new case. Now that's been since backfilled a little bit here, but the point I was just going to make here is that there's really good reason for people to be optimistic.
Yeah.
Again, I'll just sort of hit the other ones. The spike.
That's the one that I like. Look at that.
Yeah, that's the spike. The Omicron spike has really, really gone away. It is very much reflected in the wastewater data well, to sort of see, which have now dropped to essentially zero or very close to zero.
Yeah.
And the one that I like, which kind of stretches out the Omicron phase rather completely, really, we're definitely skiing downhill in a pretty serious way.
So the height of it was really right after the New Year's.
In terms of 7-day averages, we peaked at 379.6, I believe.
Yeah.
And we're down now, the 7-day daily average of 29.3. So it's just a tiny fraction of what it was.
It's interesting, I was going to say Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving, which is also only a 1-day holiday. Maybe people don't travel as much then.
Yeah,
but it started to go up, but nothing like the Christmas.
I think that though many of these spikes and things in the past were highly correlated to holidays, Omicron was kind of fundamentally different in that it was a wave that pretty much nailed everybody all across the board and came at different times, right? But it tended to have rapid rise, rapid fall. And we're very much happily in the rapid fall phase here. You know, I was noting on social media yesterday, I think that, I think yesterday was the day some of the stiffer mandates in Boston were going into effect.
Yeah.
Pretty much simultaneous with all the numbers declining rapidly.
I think she's going to get she's already gotten a little bit of trouble.
She got some trouble, but so now she's even today said, these may the numbers, our goals for exiting may actually come about in a matter of days.
But so I think she's the only city that is requiring it for restaurants.
One of the few, and even the
state
around
here, I mean, so I'm just saying it's not good for the Boston businesses because they just right. go to Cambridge or
right. But the state guidelines now are actually they eliminated even the mask mandate.
They're more moderate. You're right. Yeah.
Except for people who are immunocompromised.
Yeah, and so, also public transit, I think. And
and public transit for sure. But you know, I just think you know, spring is coming. And that's usually good in terms of decreases as well.
Yeah.
The numbers are naturally dropping. The wastewater numbers say we're really going to a good place. So I think people have to start embracing the possibility that maybe
this is here to stay,
maybe
but we can
good news is more going to be the norm. So get used to it, right? Warm up to the goodness of it all. I feel like I'm selling out here.
Well, I'll knock on wood, considering, I mean, I don't do a lot of things that are, but I have been around a few people that I know of at least three times, you know, the holidays, and we've all been okay. So,
whatever. So anyway, things are looking up.
Yeah.
There was, I think the city did, they had yet another round of grant money, I think specifically targeting restaurant and nightlife, you know, for grants of up to like $10,000 for
grants,
covering payrolls or else. But, you know, I mean, I won't get into this in great detail here, but I think that we've kind of, never mind just Cambridge, but sort of everybody's kind of fouled this up because maybe nobody did it before. They didn't know how to do it right. But, you know, there were a lot of people who businesses who actually made out quite well during the first phase of grant money.
Well, it wasn't really given in a very fair way to many businesses.
Right. It, a lot of times it depended on your relationship with a bank and how aggressive the bank
had
and
a
how
lot to do with the banks.
Yeah. Yeah. And then now they were saying, okay, we're going to, and now they actually want to give advantages to certain groups, you know, historically underrepresented groups or whatever. And I'm thinking, you know, that's a good idea too, but come on, this is a COVID problem first and foremost. And
but I think they're assuming that those groups probably had smaller businesses to begin with, or smaller restaurants, so maybe left out. I don't know.
I think though that there are so many small businesses, regardless of the sort of the identity of the ownership,
were
left out. Well, our friend Patrick Barrett actually just said the primary criteria, if not the sole criteria for eligibility, should be, did you not get money in the first or in the early rounds?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, is that not a criteria?
It is a criteria, but, you know, if they're trying to kind of fashion it and target particular groups here, I think they're kind of missing the point. You know, the disease was not sort of singling people out by, you know.
No, but I think that's a good, at least first cut to see, did you get it? And
I would agree with Patrick, though. I think that really should be the essentially the only cut. You know, did you not receive, if you got a pile of money before, then don't ask.
Well,
if you didn't,
my guess is that some of those businesses didn't get a pile of money or didn't even apply. But it it was a paycheck protection, which meant that it only went to pay your employees who were ostensibly didn't have a job, which is great, but you couldn't use it to pay rent, you couldn't use it to pay utilities, you couldn't use it for a lot of things, at least that first program. I don't know. So it didn't help some people.
I was speaking to a neighbor who just closed her business. And who, when she actually had a hard time getting her employees to come to work because they were actually doing pretty well just on the unemployment compensation.
Well, that's a whole other conversation about the
So that, and then in the end, she didn't get any money she got, she had to pay back, you know, and eventually she pretty much said, that's it. We can't do this anymore. So that's it. End of story.
Yeah. The unemployment thing, which, you know, there's issues around that, but I think the real issue was that people were getting paid more under unemployment than those jobs that they had, which then pointed out, well, how much are they getting paid for? So this pandemic had just took off, you know, the blinders on everything and exposed what everything is about. So
I can only hope that enough people learned enough from it so that
I hope too, but
better systems will be in place.
Well, let's hope, but I don't know.
We'll see. Anyway, meanwhile, you know, away from the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
The you know, our local elected body, our city council, actually did. They met this week. Yesterday,
they met on the 7th.
Well, they had a round table meeting on,
but that was Universal on a Tuesday
pre-K.
Night. Yeah, well, that was last night.
That was last night. So that was not like a regular business meeting.
No, I understand. So the last business meeting was the 7th.
Right. And then next week on Monday is President's Day. So they won't be meeting then. So we're having sort of a vacation from the 9, yeah. Which is
okay. Well, unless you watch the round tables.
So. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And I sometimes will tune into a committee meeting or two.
I do those all the time, yeah. Mainly to keep up with you and what.
Real. But on the February 7th, which was the last regular meeting, right. I wouldn't say there was a lot of business to be.
It was a short meeting, didn't it get?
A lot of these ones early. Here early. It's pretty typical, actually, early in a term to have relatively short business meetings, unless there was some gigantic unfinished matters from the.
Well, there was a COVID report. Sometimes
Though I think the questions from the councils are starting to run thin, quite honestly. They're kind of repeating themselves at this point. Yeah. Hopefully there will be no need or less need for any questions in the future. We'll see about that.
But there were a lot of policy orders. But some,
there were a few, and it was, you know, the new kid, as I like to say, the new kid, Mr. Azeem, he's sort of definitely trying to make waves, and, you know, good for him.
Yeah.
I'll just mention two that struck me. Mm-hmm. One was it was an order. I think it was more of a request for information about whether the city council could shuck off its authority for granting of curb cuts.
Which I thought made sense. But who objected to that? Somebody objected to it.
You know, I know Zondervan would have objected. I think somebody like Dennis Carlone could well object. And over the years, I think maybe Dennis probably pointed out, I could be mistaken on this, that rarely is it the case that the council will not grant the request
for curb cut. That's true.
But sometimes it has been the case that it has been used for purposes of leverage. Whether that's a good thing or not, I can't say for sure.
But if you have the inspectional services, which is supposed to be the grant, but DPW, Historical Commission, and a neighbor, whatever, signing off on something, isn't that enough? Aren't these people paid to do that?
You know, in my view, it is enough. And I think it is.
Then it gets political when it goes to the city council.
But that's why they like it. You see.
But that's why it's a waste of time. Sorry.
I know. But, you know, you could make the same argument about quite a lot of things that the council will use it.
Yeah, but I thought that was actually interesting,
you know, since I'm sort of the more the institutional memory these days, it comes with the beard, right? I remember when Marjorie Decker was on the council. Marjorie was always questioning why are we talking about curb cuts?
I know. Yeah.
You know, and so I think there's a long history of people at least questioning the issue.
Yeah.
I could be a little wrong on this, but I believe the authority to issue licenses, including liquor licenses, may have rested with the city council. Ooh. Oh yeah, and a lot of other licenses too for even doing, you know, ordinary business and whatever.
Well,
in fact, I remember reading a Harvard Crimson articles from way, way back, I think in 1940s. There was one year where they didn't elect a mayor until there were 1,041 ballots before they finally settled on a mayor. I think it was, I could be wrong on the number exactly, but
that's
it was over 1,000. That was a lot of ballots. It went on for months.
What was the issue?
It's just who wants to be mayor, really. But back then, I believe the mayor had authority, and maybe the council needed a mayor to sign off. I'm not sure now on various kinds of licenses. Now we've since created a license commission,
which makes sense.
Yes, it does. And there is authority granted to the license commission to act on behalf of the city council. And that was, I believe, we had to go to the state to establish that authority. It's actually been misquoted by a couple of rather foolhardy people in the past who wanted to get a liquor license approved and which challenging the authority of the license commission to grant such things. And that's just, that was ridiculous, of course. But anyway, there's an example where certain authority has been basically passed to another administrative function as opposed to a political function. I think it's a perfectly smart idea to do it with curb cuts, you know, myself. But I understand why some people might still want to hold the leverage, you know. I mean, then again, I'm a person who believes it's city manager when he makes appointments to boards and commissions, and that ought to be the end of the story, and that shouldn't be subject to council approval. Yeah. But apparently the council say, no, we'd like to have that authority now.
Especially since you apply to the city manager, but they usually go to the department that it's part of and try to get
ultimate sign off rests with
I understand. Well, that's now, true, because wait a minute. Speaking of the license commission, they have members, right? So is this subject to that? We don't know yet, right?
I think I know. If we're talking about the question about appointments and boards and commission, the manager doesn't see. This is going to sound sort of technical, so bear with me.
Okay.
The manager hires a police commissioner. The manager hires a fire chief.
Okay. All right.
And then by virtue of a person being the police commissioner or being the fire chief, they then become a member of the license commission along with the executive director.
Oh, so that's it.
There's hired by the city manager. So
there's no public,
these are hires. These are not appointments. Yeah.
Right. So there's no, it's not like a board. Okay. So then it doesn't.
It's called, that's why I have issue with the attorney general, actually, about
the way it was worded. It's very confusing. Yeah. Exactly.
Because we have items like the license commission, the election commission, and the conservation commission, whatever.
Right.
Not all commissions are the same.
Are set up the same way.
Right.
That's a very good point.
And nobody addressed the issue about, you know, definitions and what this applies to. Lawyers to not address such matters, that's
understand, but if they're changing the language in the charter, that will have to be addressed, yes?
Well, except that the word commission is not defined in the charter, I don't believe. Or it just says appointments to board. Maybe it says appointments to boards and commissions, but, you know, if you call something a task force, if you call something a board, if you call something an advisory board.
Well, then someone's going to have to rewrite this so that it's accurate then.
Well, or at least establish a rule, you know, about how we choose to think about it. And that'll be the rule unless somebody challenges it.
But it has to be written down, that rule. Yeah. It has to, I mean, if it's in.
Speaking of which, I don't know what the status of the appointments are, but, you know, as opposed to late last year where the manager put out a lot of requests for people to apply for various city boards and commissions.
Yes.
We were down to just one that was left over recently, which was actually itself extended for the Board of Zoning Appeals.
It was
supposed to end on January 31st. The application period ended yesterday. And now presumably there will be one or more appointments to the BZA,
How many are altogether? I forget, actually. I should know those.
And there are alternates. You know, there is associate members and full members and whatever.
It's like the planning rules.
But, you know, the BZA is one of those commissions where some of the very political people feel that they want to have political say in this. Mm-hmm. So in other words, I could get very hot about this, but if the zoning code says something, then for the most part, that's the rule. And you don't overrule it. Grant a variance just because you feel like it, because it fits in with your philosophy. Mm-hmm. There are specific questions of hardship that really should be the sole or oddity of a parcel. You know, like if you have some bizarrely shaped parcel where there's just no physical way to get the right setbacks as laid out in zoning, so you have to make an exception. But, you know, I know for a fact that there are some of the political people who would like nothing more than to have the BZA be able to say, well, we think this is a good project because we need more affordable housing. Therefore, you should just grant it because we say you should grant it.
But, you know, they have to have some background to get onto these, to be appointed. They can't just be a political activist.
They should, but they don't. There's no requirement.
Oh, come on. You have to have something, some knowledge about zoning.
Well,
which
one
they
would
could
like.
Have. A political activist does probably have a knowledge.
Possibly. Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens.
I'm only mentioning because I think this will be probably the first
test case.
Unless there are a few other appointments that are coming soon that we don't quite know about, where people who applied late last year, but the appointments have not yet come down. But I guess the only point I really wanted to make about it was that soon, you know, maybe very soon, you'll start to see some appointments coming down, which will then be challenged by counselors. And they still have no protocol for how they're actually going to review these, or if they decide that, you know, Joe Blow can't be on the Board of Zoning Appeals because, you know, the person, you know, doesn't, you know, this person believes in historic preservation or something like that. You know,
or it could be the opposite. We don't want them on because they do not believe it. I mean, who knows? I mean, we don't know yet because we don't know how many people have applied, which probably isn't a lot since they had to extend it.
Yeah, and actually, and I probably will have to just ask privately about this, but I would have a curiosity to see whether the actual, the people apply, how many people are even choosing to apply goes up
that's
or down based
saying.
On this. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think.
That's coming. Yeah. It's not before. You know, we'll see. Maybe by the February 28th meeting, we'll actually get maybe some appointments will show up and whether they will be approved.
What about the neighborhood conservation districts? Do those have a rolling?
I believe that there were the applications were requested for some of those appointments late last year. And I don't believe those appointments were made. So they
always been a little bit of a
right. And because there is now a politic in this in Cambridge right now that basically would say we don't even want them. Right. If a person believes in neighborhood conservation as a concept, then they are therefore ineligible to serve on the Neighborhood Conservation District Commission. Right. I mean, that's the kind of like insight.
No, it's not. They're not able to serve. They don't recognize even the importance. They don't even want to see conservation.
I fully expect to see some really upside down logic coming down the pike real soon.
Well, that'll be interesting.
I will be partly entertained and partly infuriated by what I see. I'm sure.
Yes.
You know, but hey. That's what they wanted, right? We'll see, right?
Yeah.
Now, another item that came up at the February 7th meeting of potentially some consequence was also from our young counselor, Azeem. Basically wanting to eliminate all parking minimums in all zones of the city, residential parking minimums. Which is an idea people have floated many times. It's actually was part of some of the discussions that were in the Neighborhood and Long-Term Planning Committee. I believe there were zoning petitions from multiple political sides who seemed to be warm to the idea, either in whole or close to transit, you know? But basically, I'm kind of mixed feelings about it, quite honestly, because in general, and again, partly maybe I live in a triple decker, we have no parking on site, right?
But
I'm not just thinking individually about my own circumstances here. I'm just thinking in terms of the bigger picture of if a property developer wants to build something, will they choose to put parking in even if it's not required because it will sweeten the pot for those who want to have a place to park their electric Lexus, or will they choose to eliminate it because they can max out the amount of saleable or rentable space by not dedicating even a little bit to either underground or surface parking? Mm. I don't know, actually. You have to talk to a property developer about their view of the economics.
I would think underground parking costs more than surface parking.
It does. Typically, it does, you know. But on the other hand, if you don't need to provide it, then you can get away with it. Now, it was interesting when Councillor Azeem was asked, I think, or sort of called in I don't know if they, his colleagues asked him or whether he was responding to public comment about it, but he then went to clarify it in a kind of a way that I'm a little, left me a little confused, to say like, well, I wasn't really, what I was really looking for was a situation where somebody has a parking area on their site currently, and they want to basically dig it up and turn it into a backyard. And then he seemed to see suggesting that that wasn't possible because they were required to keep that parking. You know, I'm not 100% sure what's true.
I know someone that's taken away a part of a driveway.
I know a spectacular example on Tremont Street, because I delivered a backyard composter there once upon a time, where I believe it was three or more neighbors, side buildings, all basically ripped up their parking garages, driveways, et cetera, and basically connected all their yards into one contiguous thing. It was like a park. It had goldfish ponds and everything. It was great.
So wait, so there's they had no off-street parking at all?
I don't know if they did, or they may have retained a little bit of a parking.
Yeah, because that's crazy. If you have a house in Cambridge, it's nice to have an off-street parking space.
It is. It is. But you may not need feel the need to have a garage.
Oh, anymore. You don't.
So you might.
No. And you see a lot of those. I've seen those in Cambridgeport. Yeah. And that's why there's a lot of backfill. That's a lot of people are buying those properties and then putting, you know, four extra units.
Of course. And of course, in Cambridge, there's also, I could show you some places where there was a, what used to be a garage is now a dwelling unit too.
No, so. That's what I just said.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
they're,
yeah.
They're not garages anymore. They're it's the prime locate right on Pearl and is it Alston or something? You can see that whole corner where it was Susan Reverby's house.
Which yeah,
is, that whole thing is now all condos. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we have them on Broadway as well. You know. So.
Yeah.
So anyway, right.
We
not
only
quite
have about less than a half a minute left. So.
Okay. All right. But anyway, so that's where that goes. We'll find out soon enough.
Okay.
But it'll definitely be part of the discussion.
We should talk about it a little more maybe in the next day.
As well as another kind of parking related matter from Craig Kelly that I'd like to tell people about.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. No one knows about yet. Okay.
All right. So anyway, so we're down to our last few seconds. So we'll see you in a few minutes.
See you in the next segment. Okay.
On Cambridge Inside Out.